The first ever criminal trial of a former president begins this week. I'm former U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara, and this week, legal expert Ricky Kleeman joins me on my podcast, Stay Tuned with Preet. We talk about jury selection, the latest trial developments, and legal strategy.
From the defense point of view, for Donald Trump to be signing checks for Michael Cohen, it would have been something usual because Michael Cohen was working for the Trumps.
The episode is out now. Search and follow Stay Tuned with Preet wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Well, good evening once again, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you all enjoyed UFC Vegas 20. The card is officially in the books, capped off by a one-sided unanimous decision win for Ciryl Gane over Jairzinho Rozenstruik, and it is time to react to the card, the main event, and everything else with all of you right here on our live post-fight show on MMAfighting.com. I am Mike Heck, and joining me to discuss this card and answer your questions, react to your thoughts tonight, we have Alex K. Lee, the Prince of Positivity, back with us. Hello, sir.
Hello.
Yeah.
Oh, nobody cares about me, Mike. We got a special guest. Keep going. Nobody cares about me.
Oh yes, we have E. Casey Lydon, the main event.
There we go.
The main event, Nostradamus, Casey, and then we do have a very special guest joining us: UFC veteran, Strikeforce veteran, PFL veteran, the former Invicta champ, and someone with her phone always on for that call to get a well-deserved opportunity back with the UFC. Let us say hello to Sarah Kaufman joining us on the program. How are you, Sarah?
Oh, I'm good. Thank you. I did not know that Alex, his nickname was the Prince of Positivity?
Yes.
I mean, it's not bad. I like it. I don't like him, but I like it.
That's all we ask for.
I'll take it.
A.K. Lee.
I'll take it.
Not bad.
Yeah, I'm okay. The nickname is great. I'm like, whatever.
Whatever, man.
Well, Sarah, it is great to have you here with your expertise. It is needed with this group. No doubt about that. But let us talk the main event before we get to the peeps. And for you guys watching right now, give us your thoughts, your reactions on everything in the chat. We'll get to them momentarily. But Sarah, Ciryl Gane, big win over Jairzinho Rozenstruik. Wasn't the most aesthetically pleasing mixed martial arts main event you'll ever see, but Ciryl Gane did what he had to do to win. He's 8-0 now, climbing up the heavyweight ranks. First main event and gets it done. What did you think of Ciryl Gane's performance tonight?
I actually thought it was a really good fight. I mean, in the realm of like crazy fights and 5-round main events, I get that it's not necessarily the fight that the general people want to watch for 25 minutes. However, I do think that he did what he needed to do. I thought he looked good. I thought he fought a really smart fight. He stayed busy against someone who is clearly, ready to knock him out at one touch. So he played it safe. But I think that in doing so, that's actually pretty hard to do. With a crowd, maybe that would have gone over a little worse because there would have been a lot of booing potentially. But as someone who's involved in the sport, I actually think that it was a smart fight, just maybe not going to gain him the most fans.
I would agree with everything you just said there. AK, what did you think of Ciryl Gane's performance? 8-0, gets a big win, first main event. How did you think he performed? I thought he was very calm, cool, and collected heading in there tonight.
Yeah, it was great, man. I think anyone who's seen Gane fight, even from like his third, I think the first time I saw him was when he won the TKO heavyweight title. And I think that's still available on Fight Pass if you want to see that fight. And like, just see him in his third pro bout, he's like one of the most mature prospects I've ever seen. Beyond just obviously the athleticism and his other physical gifts, the way he fights is like, it's not what you would expect from a guy coming up. He gets first round finishes, but he's not like hunting for them. He's not a berserker. He's highly technical. So it's really educated, and you saw that tonight. And he had to be, because Rozenstruik is also an experienced, educated fighter. It's just that in this situation, I think Gane's game plan was better. I think he's a bit quicker, and I think his techniques were just so on point. And he knew to avoid how dangerous Rozenstruik can be. I think up until the fifth round, we all thought that Jairzinho could still land a knockout blow, but Gane was just really, really sharp and made sure that didn't happen. So again, maybe it's not the you know, the big explosive heavyweight finish that we all like to see. But it made sense for Gon, and I'm glad he fought the way he did. So big statement for him.
Yeah, I think Gon kind of set the tone, Casey, about with the way this fight was going to go, because as we discussed in the preview show, Rozenstruik is a very powerful counter striker, and Gon wasn't giving him any opportunities to counter. He was being patient. He was letting Rozenstruik sort of come to him and made him pay with those jabs. Anytime Rozenstruik was getting ready to throw a big strike, he had a big jab to the face. And you kind of predicted that this would not be a barn burner that a lot of other people expected. That is how it played out. What did you think of Gon's performance in his first main event tonight?
From an entertainment standpoint, from Dana White's point of view, that fight sucked. That was a horrible fight. 25 minutes of that was not good entertainment. For Ciryl Gon, though, it was a perfect fight. I mean, outside of winning the 50, he doesn't win the 50K for a big bonus, but he just needed, like, Bisping in the first three rounds, he kept saying, all that matters is winning, 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 winning. Winning is what gets you places in this sport. And that's what Gon did. Now, toward the end of the fight, Bisping got really bored and was all like, he's not going to gain any fans. Dude, there were no fans there. So gaining fans was not important for this fight, because no matter if he would have knocked out Rozenstruik in like 2 seconds, it don't matter. It don't matter. He wasn't jumping in front of John Jones. He wasn't jumping in front of Derek Lewis as far as getting a potential title shot. So I thought Gon did exactly what he needed to do. He fought. He got a W. He's moving up the rankings, still undefeated, and he's going to fight even a higher. Rozenstruik was ranked 3, so he'll fight. I don't know. He's one fight away from a title shot right now. So, great fight for Gon. Crappy fight for the fans.
Sarah, how important is? I mean, like Casey said, he goes out there and knocks out Rozenstruik in 20 seconds. Yeah, it's great, and you know, it's a recency bias sport. Everyone celebrates it. They're like, oh, let's do this and this and this. But I think cage experience is super important for a guy like that too. I mean, he was 7-0 heading into this fight, and now he just had his first main event. He gets a win. How important is just logging that time at this point in his career and doing it in a big spot at the same time?
I think having that 25 minutes and having gone the 25 minutes, not gassing out, I actually thought the pace was not, again, like not a lightweight pace and not a flyweight pace, but I thought it was a pretty consistent pace for the full 25 minutes. There was some, you know, holding on the cage, but it wasn't, you know, minutes and minutes at a time, which I think is especially where you get bored, but also where you can gas yourself out. I thought he still had good speed. He was still using his movement. He was using those front leg kicks a lot and just finding his rhythm, finding the ability to fight a smart game plan, stick to his game plan for a full 25 minutes against someone who's clearly fought many more opponents and also a lot of the best names and the biggest names in the sport. It's going to help him a lot in the long run. And at the end of the day, he gets a win. And a year from now, people aren't going to remember if it was a one punch knockout or a 25 minute fight. It's just going to go as a win. He beat the number 3 guy. Now he moves up, he gets one more fight, gets the title fight. And you know, next weekend there's fights, the weekend after that there's fights, the weekend after that there's fights. People will forget whether this was the most exciting or the most boring fight, and they'll just remember that he won. So I think for him, that was a huge step forward. Great for him.
Yeah, I mean, you got to mind your P's and Q's with a guy like Jairzinho Rozenstruik. You can't get sloppy in there. I mean, look what happened with the Alistair Overeem fight. 24 and a half minutes, Alistair Overeem's winning. And then it just takes one and changes the whole pace of the fight. So good win for Ciryl Gon. It's not a highlight reel win, but it's a win, and it's a main event win. So good on him. He's on to bigger and better things. We'll see what happens with Jairzinho Rozenstruik. Of course, AK and I will be discussing what we think could be next for both of these gentlemen on to the next one. Magomed Ankalaev gets a decision win in the co-main event. Montana De La Rosa versus Mayra Bueno Silva went to a draw. Pedro Munhoz, Jimmy Rivera was awesome. Munhoz gets the win there. Oh, okay. And then Bruce Leroy, Alex Caceres gets his fourth straight win over the wild man, Kevin Kroom. It was a crash. It was a good fight.
Kevin Kroom.
It was a good fight. Crash Kevin Kroom. We're still waiting on the bonuses. Any predictions for the bonuses here? We only had one finish tonight from the newcomer Ronnie Lawrence. Stops Vince Cachero in the third round. Another referee letting some things go on. Probably a little bit too long, but it is what it is. Wasn't the most egregious late stoppage of all time. We've seen worse just over the last 48 hours, if you are on Twitter and watching crazy fights and how those things play out.
That ref? If that ref wanted just extended that really late stoppage, we could have had all decisions. That ref screwed it up, man. We had a world record decision card. Has there been a UFC card of all decisions yet? There's been one, right?
I think there was one, and there was 11. It was in Brazil, right? There was 11 decisions, and yeah. It was like crazy odds that it would go to all decisions.
There was also a UFC event, I think, called Knockout, and there was no knockouts on it. I think there was submissions. I think there may have been a couple of submissions, but there was a UFC event called Knockout that had no knockouts on it.
I don't know who it was from a fighter, but during the co-main event, you know, the UFC puts people's Twitter post up. For some reason, they never put mine up. I don't know why, but they put up someone's post, and it says for the co-main, it says, "Ain't no way this is going the distance." And I saw that. I was like, "Ooh, this is totally going the distance." It's like the ultimate curse. You never say that. This fight, ain't no way this fight going the distance.
I think we've learned these lessons by now, but still, good win for Ankalaev. He goes the full 15. Yeah. We'll see what happens with him, but a good win for him. Alexis Davis got a nice win. Thiago Moises looked awesome against Alex Hernandez, although Alex Hernandez wasn't a big fan of the decision. I completely agreed with it. I thought it was a 30-27 win for Moises. Great debut for Ronnie Lawrence, stops Vince Cachero, and Dustin Jacoby against Maxim Grishin was a fun fight to kick things off. Very fun fight. Jacoby gets the decision. Could have gone either way, but I'm not mad about it.
Can we talk about this? So we have Sarah Kaufman here. Probably knows Alexis Davis better than anyone outside of Alexis Davis's like immediate family and friends. You guys have fought three times. I think your second fight was probably one of the best fights of that year. So I think there are some Alexis Davis questions in there. So I don't want to step over the viewers, but seeing that she was the underdog, considerable underdog, I think, in this fight against such a younger, less experienced opponent. What was your read of sort of this fight going into? Were you surprised when you see? I know Mazel's a very talented fighter, so all the respect to her. Were you surprised when you kind of saw that a lot of people were kind of counting Alexis out?
No, like I know how good Alexis is, and I feel like Alexis has always fought like her best fights when I fought her. Like our second fight, I mean, Esther took one of my favorite fight photos ever from that fight. And so I definitely know how she can be, but I think at 125 specifically, I don't think it was a great weight class for her. I think that she was losing a lot of size. And then she was kind of always seemed to be a little bit behind on the ball, would get hit a lot, just didn't really seem to be able to pull the trigger in a way that I thought that she has the ability to. And then tonight she just found the home for those leg kicks. And definitely that changed from that second round to the third round, how that fight was playing out. And then in the first round, I was a little bit worried because she was getting caught on the end of those punches that Mazo was throwing on the end range. She wasn't able to find her way in. And I did worry that that's how the fight was going to go, that she would kind of get planted and stuck on the spot and kind of get pieced apart a bit. But once she got it to the ground, it just seemed like she figured something out. She adjusted her game plan, and then she looked great for the rest of that fight.
There you go. Joseph Boza. I wish Sarah was back in the UFC. She would do well in the women's bantamweight division. I think we're all in agreement that she should be back there. We do have bonuses,
I'm available.
Friends. We got bonuses.
It's got to be double fight of the night.
All right.
Nope.
It's the perfect night. It was the perfect night for double fight of the night. All right, then.
One fight of the night, one performance bonus.
Oh, no.
Who would you give double one fight performance of the night bonus? Casey?
I'm sorry?
One performance bonus.
I guess the one guy that finished the fight, right?
Correct.
That is,
and we know what the fight of the night was.
Yeah.
Sarah was asking who would you give the other fight of the night?
To the 25ers, the lady 25ers, De La Rosa and Bueno Silva.
Yeah, Bueno.
Yeah. That was a great fight. I scored it for Bueno Silva. Actually, I thought I had 29-27. I thought she won all three rounds. And you know, at the point deduction giving her 29 rather than 30, but I thought she looked great. I thought it was a great fight in general.
I agree. Yeah.
She's got a violent clinch that Bueno Silva. Good God.
I would hope
those knees.
Oh, That was scary.
Poor De La Rosa. I felt like the entire third round, De La Rosa was like hiding her face because like she didn't want people to see. Like when, as soon as they broke apart, because they were on the cage for a while, she broke apart and you're like, wah! I was like, oh yeah, yeah, his knees hurt.
Yeah.
I hope that they gave. Go ahead, Sarah. No, go ahead.
I was just gonna say I couldn't tell with in that fight on some of the clinches whether her hair was getting caught or not, or just that she just didn't know how to get out of the clinch. Because she was reacting to me, De La Rosa was reacting as if, like, oh, she's holding my hair, which sometimes happens. And I mean, if you can get away with it, you get away with it. But I couldn't really tell. And then I just think as the fight went on, it was like her escape was bringing her head down, which just got her face into those knees one too many times, I thought.
Was Buena Silva, was she just not... I was as much punishment as De La Rosa was taking. I kept thinking, it's like, is Buena Silva just not doing something quite right? Because like those knees seem to be landing super clean to the body and to the head. I don't understand how De La Rosa actually just survived that 15 minutes. To be honest,
she's insanely tough.
Is it just
that's toughness? Definitely part of it?
Is that all it was, yeah, there? Do you think just that was just?
I think part of it is that she is very tough, and I feel like in other fights she's taken some like pretty hard shots and just kind of that wrestler mentality of you just walk through something to just hold on for dear life to try and force that takedown. And she was successful a few times. I do think that a lot of the knees to the face like glanced off, fortunately, and didn't, you know, she'd duck her head down and then rip her head up to try and get out of the way. And so I think in that way she kind of managed to avoid some of the damage. But I thought the body shot, the knees to the body were great. And they looked like they did. It didn't feel nice to me, but I think that De La Rosa is just quite tough.
Those knees did not.
Yeah, she is. She's a monster. She's like very tough. She went 15 with Viviani and decided to like become a striker and a kickboxer in that fight, which is very surprising. But she went in there and did 15 minutes with Viviani Araújo, who's very, very tough. And De La Rosa is very, very tough as well. So if you're just joining us, fight of the night, no brainer, Pedro Munhoz versus Jimmy Rivera, such a good fight. And the lone performance of the night, newcomer Ronnie Lawrence, guy is a savage. 12, I think he had like 9 or 10 takedowns and gets the finish. He's just the pace that guy puts on is unbelievable. And he looked great in his Octagon debut.
And the UFC saved an extra $50,000 too.
Casey, I was going to say, do you think there's any chance they gave the 50, the other 50 to Ronnie, or maybe 25 each to Pedro and Jimmy? Probably not, right? I'm being Mr. Positivity again. No, that's not unlikely.
Yeah.
No?
The filthy rich stay rich by just giving money away. That's how it works. Okay. So positive.
They got
positive
to save on some salaries.
I can hope.
That's just a big bummer. They didn't do double fight of the night. I mean, good for Ronnie Lawrence.
Yeah.
But, Sarah, before we go to the questions, I want to ask you, what did you think, like, what about Gon's striking, his footwork, his stance switches, his jabs? What about it made Jairzinho so hesitant just to go in there and just attack, you know, just be more aggressive? Is it just a fear of getting knocked out by Gon? Like, or was there something, did you see something kind of tricky of his footwork that just put Jairzinho made him hesitant for 25 minutes, essentially?
I think there were a few things. I think one of the first things was that Gon very rarely stopped moving. He kind of bounced the whole time. So he was on the balls of his feet and he was doing those little level changes, little stutter steps, kind of covering the distance, feinting, coming back out. He was never planted. And when you want to throw with power, ideally you want someone to be planted so they can't run away from you. Because when you do, you throw something as hard as you can. If they back away, there's a good chance you're off balance. And you saw that a couple times. I don't remember if it was like the fourth or the fifth, but Gon kind of timed Rosenstreich coming in. And he managed to throw, I think it was a left cross, and slipped out to his right as Rosenstreich was throwing left hook. And he just like went flying and just ended up on a perfect angle, out of range, couldn't get hit. So I think that that played a huge factor, and that was the first thing. And I also think that he stood in that southpaw stance and super like sideways and linear almost, which meant that it I think that if Rozenstruik had thrown a lot of those like low calf and outside leg kicks, that would have changed how he'd stood. But as it was, with Gon standing with that right foot forward and like really heavy lead, he was able to use it like really effectively to kind of do those like oblique and front kicks just off that front leg, which kept the distance, and it made it again so that it was, you know, a lot of times just that swing and a miss, and it just felt.
Sarah, you didn't pay your internet bill. What's going on?
Sorry, we'll get her back. It's this Canada internet. You guys know I have to deal with it all the time. We'll get her back. But people, please get your questions in and people step it up with the questions tonight, all right? Because we have a real world champion here. Okay. We have Sarah Kaufman. She'll be back with us in a second. So please. No, none of this Duval stuff that we usually do, guys. I know it's cute. We shout Duval. It's real fun. No. Tonight, guys, professional. Good question. You guys always have good questions, but I mean, just like,
Sarah's
step
back.
It up just a little. Okay, good. See, Sarah's
am
back.
I here still?
Mm-hmm. We got you.
There you go. You pay. You pay your internet bill. You good?
It's not her fault. You know, it's Canada internet. Fair, not her fault. It's Canada internet.
To be fair, I only purchased internet starting in June of last year, and I'm pretty sure I have like the cheapest internet that you can get. So sometimes it's not great. So I do apologize for my $28 a month internet.
Sarah Kaufman being cheap. Oh, so on brand.
You know.
Well, anyways, man. Sarah, I don't know if you heard. I was just warning and cautioning our viewers to class it up and have some really good questions. Cause before you got cut off, we're in the middle of giving the kind of analysis and insight that we cannot possibly hope to give. I mean, I take a lot of pride in our work, but the angle obviously that you're coming from is much more educated and specific than we can offer. So people, this is the kind of, I already see some questions that I think directed specifically towards Sarah. So I'm excited. I think
so. Sarah, before you got cut off though, do you think Jairzinho basically needed to be, he needed to punish Gon's lead leg more? Because I don't think he really attacked. I don't really think he attacked that right, Gon's lead leg at, well, maybe a couple of times, but nothing of consistency. Would that been the game changer if he would have maybe gone after it a little bit harder?
I think so. Yeah, if he was throwing kicks and if he was aiming for takedowns to try and pick up that leg or do something with that leg, those low calf kicks, those leg kicks, anything attacking that front leg would have probably forced Gon to change and alter how he was standing and how he was moving in. But the fact that it wasn't attacked and he was able to just keep using that right foot to kind of do little taps, punch in, you know, and then do the little side kicks and the oblique kicks to that front leg, just stopped Rozenstruik from closing that distance, and he'd get stopped every time he went to come in, and then didn't make Gon change anything.
All right.
While we're talking about calf kicks, this is kind of segue. Casey, I'm sure you see a lot of people asking about calf kicks in the questions, so I don't know if you're going to bring one of those up, but there's a lot of people asking, so Michael Bisping, I think he was joking Paul Felder. They were kind of joking, about banning calf kicks because we've just been seeing it so frequently. So kind of two questions. I mean, what do you think of that joke suggestion? And two, like, Sarah, how new is this technique? Like, for us, it's like, obviously, we talk about it a lot now. We're seeing it in a lot of fights. I think every fight, I feel like almost every fight tonight opened with someone throwing calf kicks. Is this that new, or is this something that you've dealt with before and just people are only starting to notice it now? What's your thoughts on that?
I think, Benson Henderson was definitely one of the first people to really use it consistently. I read somewhere that someone posted, or maybe it was Sean Shelby posted, that it was actually someone, Wilson Reyes maybe, back in like 2010 might have used it down with ATT. But from what I remember, Benson Henderson was kind of the first guy who started using it. Everyone's like, what are you doing? That's dumb. Like, kick them in the leg, make their thigh hurt. Punch him in the face, kick him in the face. Like, why would you do that? That's so stupid. And now that people have gotten effective at it and are targeting it, it's not an accident. They've realized that, you know, one, two, three of those, all of a sudden that whole game plan changes and people can't move. And it is very hard to defend.
Yeah.
It's hard to counter off of it. I mean, your options are kind of like, get your leg out of the way. Try and turn your shin over, but if you lift your shin too high, you still get your calf hit. Try and punch through it, which might work, but again, you're taking damage and you're not usually getting taken down off of it. So when you throw a regular leg kick, A lot of times people catch those, punch you in the face. Even if you don't get hit, you lose balance, you fall down, now you're on the bottom. So I just think it's, of all the trends, of all the stance switching and the oblique kicks and the shoulder throws and whatever else people have, you know, over the years has been a trend that they thought the Superman punches that were a big thing. People figure them out and they kind of disappear. But I think more and more with the calf kick, it's just a really hard hard kind of offense to stop and to be effective with. It doesn't take much effort to be really effective. So until someone figures that out, I think that they're going to keep being effective. And I think, you know, they're going to decide a lot of fights and change dynamics. And I also think that in some ways, it's now going to force people to work their opposite side a little bit more. You know, I personally prefer to be orthodox almost all the time. I think fundamentals are so important. But now all of a sudden, if that leg's kicked out and you can't base on it and you're worried about someone kicking it one more time and the fight might be over, you might have to go switch stance. And in that switch stance, you need to be working defense and off, because it's not, you spend hours doing one way and maybe once in a while stand the opposite. But I think you'll start to see people developing that second side a little bit more, for purely for the reason of saving that leg if it gets hit.
I was thinking when I was seeing Gon being just very light on his feet, and a lot of times he was just switching stances for no real, but switching stances and not really attacking. And I think that was just, to me, when I was watching, that was just putting a little bit of hesitation in Jairzinho if he was ever intending to attack the legs of Gon. So, and I also thought that of Jimmy Rivera at some point. I was like, bro, switch stance. And I don't think he did maybe in the final round, but it wasn't really effective at that point. Were you thinking that at some point, like once you get a good kick, like during the Munoz Rivera fight, were you thinking while you're watching, like, Rivera, you got to switch stance or do something? What were you thinking, Sarah?
I mean, I think that Rivera was so confident in some ways in, like, okay, I can put him asleep with one shot. And those, like, pretty much any shot that landed in that fight, everyone was like, ooh, ah, you could hear the power. You could see the power both of them were throwing with. And at the same time, he actually landed a lot of leg kicks on Munoz as well. So, like, Pedro's calf, I'm sure, is going to be sore because he didn't stick with it. And I feel like Pedro got a little bit ahead and then just kept chopping at it. And whether it's a matter of just Jimmy wasn't comfortable switching, or if he thought that by switching he wouldn't have that push to drive off that back leg because that left leg was so compromised, I'm not sure. Or maybe he just hasn't tried switching and just couldn't get it in his head that this is a good idea, knowing that you're against someone who's clearly so skilled that if you switch and your defense isn't there, you might just get knocked out. I'm not sure exactly why he wouldn't switch when it was that bad. I think it's either he was not confident or he couldn't because that leg was too far gone and that he couldn't push off of it.
All right. Have we covered calf kicks, gentlemen and ladies?
For now.
for now. All right.
There's always, like, different leg kick trends. Remember, it was like John Jones was throwing the, like, push kick, those, like, push front kicks to the legs. And then Wonder Boy was eating them from Darren Till. And that created, like, kind of a problem because it, like, tore, like, Wonder Boy's knees completely up. And he was just like, oh, I hate those things. They should be banned. And we're like, you're a karate guy. Like, that's like your bread and butter. That's like a kick you throw all the time. So, yeah. And then we don't really see those as much anymore. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I am of the thought, I don't love when people just kick straight to the knees. Like, I think if you want to kick the thigh, that's fine. Like, if I want to get armbarred and I don't tap and I want my arm to snap in two, that's my choice. And that's kind of part of the fight game. But if someone just stomps on my knee and my knee just explodes, there's no option for me to tap to that. You know, it's a good offense, but in the realm of sportsmanship, it, you know, is potentially career ending, or it puts you out for, you know, 9 months, a year, if your knee entirely explodes and blows out and you lose an ACL. So I think that any kind of technique that's like direct to a joint where you don't have the option to say, I'm out, should be illegal if other things like knees to the head on the ground are illegal. Like, I would rather have knees to the head on the ground than someone stomp my knee out and in one strike, you know, I'm potentially done. That's how I feel about it. Like, you're not allowed to hit someone in the back of the head. I also think you shouldn't be able to stomp on someone's direct knee joint.
Yeah. So do you think it's kind of like a, almost in like an unwritten rule amongst fighters now to just not do that anymore? Cause we don't see it as much anymore, even though it's super effective.
No, I don't. I think that people would do it if they think that it's going to be effective, if it's going to work. But I think when you go, you have to be so confident in throwing them and you have to be so accurate in throwing them, because if you miss, people now are, you're just getting punished for them. And I think that's what you saw with Holly and Amanda Nunes, actually. Holly likes those side kicks and those oblique kicks. And the reason, one of the reasons she got knocked out was she went to do that oblique kick from her front leg. She missed, fell to the inside. As she stepped out, Amanda stepped over and head kicked her in the face. If you watch that, she actually tries to throw that right side kick to the thigh. And whether it's Amanda moves or she just misses, I don't exactly remember, but I remember watching it. She slips to the inside, steps out, gets kicked, and that's the end of the fight. So I just think it's riskier to throw them.
I need to rewatch that.
See,
yeah.
We wouldn't get that kind of insight from Jose Youngs. Just throwing that out there.
We get a lot of wonderful things from Jose, okay, when he's on the show. But yes, you're right. Yes, this is a Sarah Kaufman special right here.
But what anime does Amanda Nunes like?
Okay.
Oh, God. What are the,
that I don't
what are the
know.
Peeps said?
Okay. No, we're going to talk we'll talk dancing shows before we talk anime if Sarah's around, all right? We're not talking anime if Sarah's there, okay?
All right, questions. All right.
So let's go to that.
Do. Let me find one real quick.
So it looks like in terms of the three bonus awards, the last time that happened was UFC 208, apparently.
And what was that? Do you know who that was?
I was there. So what was I? I have no idea.
I was there as well.
What was
that? That was not the best card ever. I would say Poirier Miller must have got fight of the night.
No, what was 208? What was 208? What was the main?
That
event?
Was the Holly Holm and Jermaine Duranemi.
Oh, that was the Brooklyn card. Oh, I do not. Yeah, that was a horrible night for everyone.
I don't remember.
Not like, for Jermaine.
Jermaine won the dang title, and I thought that was even a good night for her. Like, that was just. Oh, man.
I'm trying to remember if there was even a finish on that card.
Poirier and Jacare. That's it.
Yep. Oh, Jacare. That's what it was.
The only finish. Yeah, the only finish.
Before we get to the actual fights, we have this question.
When will we see Sarah fight again?
Well, this is a tough question because I am pretty much always available and always looking for a fight. Although, I mean, this might be gross, but okay. I'll show you guys anyway. So I actually just had surgery on my foot. Can you see it?
Oh, yeah. We see it. That's a foot.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, hold on. Keep it there. Let me see it again.
Oh, sorry.
Hold on.
We currently, it's... Ugh. Oh, this is like some weird fetish thing.
Yeah.
You know, this is probably the most views you've ever had. Anyways.
Felice Herrick's mad right now. You're butting in on Felice Herrick's territory. Felice Herrick is furious right now.
Back to fighting. I just had like a minor surgery to fix some small things that were going wrong with my toe with some bone spurs and that kind of thing. So it's only been a couple weeks, but it's already, I did some light rolling today and some boxing. So a couple more weeks. And then again, I will be ready to go. I'm still at a place where I could make weight tomorrow if I needed to make weight. And I try to stay in good shape. I stay in cardio shape. I stay in technical, you know, sharpness and work on all my skills. Really, I'm just out here looking for a fight, guys. I don't know. No one fight me. But it also doesn't help that COVID has kind of shut down a lot of the options. And I know that at this point, 135ers, the main division is in the UFC. Invicta, like I loved fighting for them, but you know, just didn't really have enough opponents. Like I knew that it was a bit of a struggle with experience, you know, with me having now, you know, 27 fights and some of the girls there only having a few, just commission wise, sometimes they won't put those fights together. So I will fight anywhere for at 135. Ideally, I want to be the best in the world and know that I can be the best in the world. And so for me, that is currently in the UFC. But as of yet, no options have come up. I do think that if I can get a fight before then, just to have a win coming off of the loss at 155, that would definitely help my cause. But I'm always going to put my name, you know, if something comes up short notice, I'll always put my name in the hat, and hopefully at some point it gets chosen. And if not, then I'll just keep doing what I'm doing and bettering myself as a martial artist and eventually find that opportunity.
You know, yes. So Bellator has, I think, teased the possibility of 135. Bellator didn't have 135, unfortunately, but man, if they did a Grand Prix and Sarah Kaufman was not involved, that'd be ridiculous. That'd be straight up ridiculous. So hopefully that happens. I don't know. We need Sarah. We need you at the Mohegan Sun Arena in glamorous Uncasville, Connecticut, getting ready for in the opening in a Grand Prix tournament. I'm just saying, it has to be done. So I think that'd be a great spot. I know, again, UFC, of course, like they, I don't know why they haven't called you up, but I think a Bellator Grand Prix with you in it would be just awesome.
Yeah, Bellator 135. I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. we got a Seahawks fan. Seahawks fan 91. Does anyone else know that Alex Caceres is on a 4-fight winning streak? I find that hard to believe considering his up and down career. I will say I knew he was on a 4-fight winning streak. I know it's kind of an under the radar 4-fight winning streak, but it is a 4-fight winning streak nonetheless. But Caceres took on a wild man in Kevin Krum. He was crash indeed, and Caceres showed that even though he fought a guy with a lot of experience, there's a difference between fight experience and octagon experience. And Caceres has a shitload of octagon experience, as he showed in that fight. So, Sarah, let me ask you. Sorry, AK. Didn't mean to get all New England on you and start throwing out S-bombs, but here we are. Sarah, what did you think of Alex Caceres' performance tonight against an absolute wild man in Kevin Krum?
Yeah, I enjoy watching him fight. And some of the, like that, those triangles, I enjoyed that he also admitted that his legs were gassing, and so he almost didn't try to get the finish in some ways too, because a lot of people would be like, oh no, I just didn't have it, or they kind of make up an excuse for why they didn't get it, as opposed to just being like, well, honestly, like, I knew that he was going to keep coming and that I needed my legs, and they were kind of burnt out. But I just thought he fought a really smart fight. And I mean, someone who's like constantly kind of running in and pressuring, you know, he nearly got the finish towards the end there. I like watching a fight, but I'm not going to lie, I did not know that he was on a 4-fight win streak. But I also don't know that many people are on 4-fight win streaks, because there are often so many fights that I can't keep up, that if I don't watch them live, I just don't really watch them, unless it's kind of pertaining to a friend that I have that's fighting, or someone in my division that I'm keeping an eye on. So I didn't know that, but I am happy for him and hope that he gets kind of a step up, because where's he even ranked? Like the division's just pretty crazy. Like, is he ranked or is he not ranked?
Unranked. He's not ranked.
No, I don't think he's ever broken the top 10.
Not top 10, top 15, which you love, Casey.
Top 15 is not a thing.
It is a thing.
It's not a thing.
It is if you're number 12, Casey. It is if you're number 12.
Yeah,
if you're number 16, top 16 is all that matters.
Exactly. It's all about managing expectations, perspective, Casey. It's funny for Caceres. This is actually his, I mean, technically he had a 5-fight win streak a few years ago. It was erased by a no contest. One of the fights was turned to a no contest because he was smoking the weeds, you know, which we don't approve of here on MMAfighting.com, for the record. Don't approve that kind of behavior. But regardless, I think it's a little unfair. He technically should have been.
Whoa. Are you speaking for the whole site here?
I am speaking for the whole, yes, I am the corporate representative of Vox Media, SBNation.com, MMAfighting.com. We do not approve the smoking of the weeds. So,
oh, it seems like, I'm sorry, it seems like your internet went down, AK. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm back on. No. Okay. Sorry. I'm miming it now. I had a see, Casey. I had a point now. I had a point to make.
Why don't you stop smoking that wacky tobacco? Because your short-term memory with my brain. Gone,
absolutely.
Yeah. You said he had five fights, but then the one fight got taken away because of the smoking.
Yes.
Weed.
Yeah, the smoking of the weeds. Yes. Sorry. What I actually wanted to ask was about Kroom specifically, because you mentioned two things. First about Kroom was, in your experience, like, did you find it easier or more? And it's not a binary question, obviously. It probably depends who it is, but did you find it easier or more difficult if it was an opponent that you knew was like unpredictable? You know, not someone that was going to follow a specific game plan. Would you prefer that kind of opponent, or did you prefer those who you're like, okay, well, I know what this person's like, I know how good they are, but at least I know what they're coming with. I mean, what was your, you know, what would be your preference?
It's there's always more on the line when it's someone who is unconventional. So it's, if the expectation is that you're going to run through someone, but they have this super weird style, it's definitely harder in my mind, because I'm a pretty standard fighter, to kind of deal with the craziness of something that shouldn't land but does, as opposed to someone who throws a good fundamental jab or a hook or a normal takedown. When someone just dives for something, it creates these scrambles. And if they have the conditioning to just be an insane person and just jump on anything and throw anything from any angle, it often takes a little while to kind of figure that out. And then the goal is always slow them down or just be one step ahead of them and don't let them get to that crazy stage. But I also think Cindy Dandois. So she is not the most conventional of fighters, I would say. And yet she's won against so many people who are really good because she just commits to doing what she's doing. It doesn't look pretty, but she makes it happen. And people struggle in that style to try and combat that. So I definitely think that the wildness and the kind of somewhat spontaneous reactions of people for me are more challenging than someone who is a fundamentally structured athlete.
There we go.
All right.
Casey, let me ask you.
Oh,
yes. We'll get to Joseph's question in a second. AK and I will answer this question tomorrow, but Caceres after the fight, he says, I want a top 15 guy. Been here long enough. I deserve a top 15 guy. Do you agree with him? Should he get a top 15 guy after that victory tonight?
I don't see why not. I could see him getting someone like a Shane Burgos, someone coming off a loss who's been out for a while. And I think, yeah, someone like that. I could see him getting a top 10, top 15 guy that's coming off a loss. I think that's who the UFC should probably match him up with. Yeah,
I like it. I also think he's going to get a top 15 guy. Have one in mind, and you'll find that out tomorrow.
Ooh.
Ooh, yeah.
What a
Joseph
tease.
Boza is, yes, I'm good at that. I'm like Ryan Seacrest up in here. Is Magomed Ankalaev?
I knew Sarah liked that one.
Without the hair. Without the hair. We'll have the decision right after the break.
This week on The Pitch, would you like fries with that?
People are what make franchises run. The person who knows the business inside and out.
Yep.
Not someone who came off Wall Street because their check clears. Franchairs is the first investment marketplace where people can invest in franchises.
So you said $800 billion is what this market is a year. And hundreds of businesses are actually franchised businesses.
Thousands.
Thousands and thousands.
There are more brands franchised than there are stocks on the NASDAQ.
Oh.
You're raising a $4 million price round.
And what are the terms on that?
The $19 million post-money valuation.
And do you not think that the valuation is a little frothy?
This week, things get frothy when Kenny Rose brings a new alternative investment class to retail investors. Go right now and subscribe to The Pitch wherever you listen to podcasts.
Is Ankalaev somebody to look out for in the light heavyweight division after his debut? He was probably nervous for versus Paul Craig. He's racked off 6 wins in a row. AK, we'll start with you. I think I would say yes, Ankalaev is somebody to look out for in the light heavyweight division. But do you look at him right now and say, this dude can fight for a title sooner rather than later?
All the way, all the way. Would I say this year? Doubtful. But I mean, I consider sooner, anytime within the next 2 years, I would not be surprised at all. I'm so impressed with those skills. Joseph mentions the Paul Craig fight. He dominated that fight. He dominated the Paul Craig fight up until the end when he got caught by Paul Craig third round, last second magic, which he's not the only fighter that's happened to. So certainly no shame in that. But yeah, I mean, even if you take that fight into account, that to me does not diminish like what an exciting prospect this guy is. So yeah, I'm really high on Ankalaev. I thought he would finish Krylov, but Krylov is really good as well. So again, it's not like I think less of Ankalaev because he couldn't get the job done. If anything, the fact that he found a way to sort of neutralize such a dangerous opponent and kind of adjust his game plan. I'm sure he was hoping to get an early finish, but he got you know, a sort of a more measured Krylov, and he matched him in that sense. He's really has the whole, just looks to have the whole like well-rounded skill set that we look for in a UFC champion. So I don't know if he can go all the way and win it. We don't know what the 205 division's really actually the top it's even going to look like a year from now, but could he contend for a title? Yeah, I'll say this. I'll go as far as say I'll be surprised if he does not compete for a UFC title someday.
There you go. What did you think of Ankalaev's performance, Sarah?
I felt like so many of the fights tonight were very well rounded as mixed martial artists. You know, you saw like the wrestling transitions mixed in with the striking. You saw like really nice range and distance. And I thought that's what he brought to that fight. You know, he stayed patient. He stayed composed. He landed some, when he threw with power. And then he utilized his wrestling and his kind of jujitsu when it wasn't necessarily fully expected, given how the striking was going, I thought. So I enjoyed the fight. I thought it looked really good. And yeah, I liked it. That's all.
Is he a future title contender? Do you see him facing?
I don't know, whoever's going to be champion.
In some ways, I feel like I can't even like really picture who the 205 division is sometimes, because I just feel like I don't see them fight very often. But I know that they do fight. But I just, to me, it's not a division that stands out in my mind as these are the 205 fighters. Sorry.
I think he's very good. I don't know if we'll see him fight for a title, but he's obviously good. And if he can knock people out, and if he has to slow the fight down and grind out a decision, he can do that, which is good for winning. Not necessarily great for fans that want that violence, but that's smart fighting, and that's what wins the championships.
Now that Jones is out of the, not counting John Jones, he now has the longest win streak. Six is the long. He was tied with Grover Teixeira. Now he has the longest win streak at 205. So definitely one to watch.
Yes, I think he will be a tough out, Tristan. No doubt about that. It's definitely a guy to keep an eye on. He's only going to get better. So is he in Vegas? I think he's in Vegas right now too.
I think this is the concern for him now. I wonder if people aren't going to want to fight him. I think he's a bad stylist and matchup for a lot of the guys that are in the top 10. He doesn't quite have the name value that probably some of these guys are looking for. And I think he's really dangerous. So this is the only thing that's really going to slow him down, is I think some people are not going to be jumping at the chance to fight him.
Oh, absolutely not. Why would you want to fight him?
Yeah.
I'm still working on how to pronounce his name correctly. Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, because like he's up and he's. I was like, oh man, I'm gonna have to start saying this guy's name a lot. Like, because you know, we have lots of fighters in the UFC. I'm like, okay, you know, they find a fight night in prelims, you know, whatever. But like, oh, he's gonna be a main card dude pretty soon. And and the guys like that next wave, that the new generation of 205ers, he's part of it. So get used to it. Yeah, but yeah, I don't see guys lining up to fight him though.
I actually think he's in a great spot right now, because the whole top six, every one of those guys, they're booked. So one of two things can happen. He either gets the loser of like any three of those fights, which how are you going to say no coming off a loss? Or he didn't take a lot of damage tonight at all. So let's just say somebody falls out. You can slide him right back in, especially if he's training out at Vegas and he's going to stick around for a little while. So I actually think he's in a pretty decent spot right now, as opposed to like getting into the number eight spot, which you probably will become Tuesday. And then like all the top seven, none of them have fight books and they're like, nah, I don't want to fight this guy. Now you can just slide him in and he's actually in a really good place right now. So I think the timing's really good for him to make a move at this point in time. But we'll see.
We'll see.
That's smart. That's a smart analysis.
Mike, you're a smart guy.
Me?
Mike, Sarah, thank you. Sarah, thank you. I say this to him all the time. I say this, Mike, you're a smart guy. I'm glad he gets to hear it from someone whose opinion matters to him. Because I know sometimes, you know, people like Casey and I can say it doesn't mean anything, but he hears it from a pro. Now it you know, please, Mike, take that, please.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. All right.
I'm writing that down. The pull clip.
Yes.
Of Wins. Yeah,
please. Put that out there on social media.
Yes, my wife will be so proud.
We're gonna frame this clip somehow on the wall. Just gonna loop it
with the foot.
Yeah, there it is again.
When that foot showed up, and we got all these thumbs up. All the view counts went up. It's crazy. The foot shows up,
spiked.
Spiked. Yeah, it's amazing.
What else we got? Thank you, Tristan. You're the sickos. Tristan Gordette always coming through with something. Thank appreciate
you.
That.
You know he's going to be on to the next one too.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, Pedro Munhoz calls out TJ Dillashaw as every bantamweight has. Who wins the Dillashaw fight out of all the callouts? I feel like this is a very popular question coming out of these events because there's always high level bantamweight fights on all of these cards. So Casey, now we have another entry into the Dillashaw sweepstakes. One Pedro Munhoz. The likelihood of him getting that fight, and who do you think's the favorite right now to get a fight of that level?
I don't think it's Pedro Munhoz, unfortunately. It's smart for him to do that call out. If Dillashaw is not fighting for the title next, which if he's not fighting the winner of Jan Aljo, which I don't think he deserves because of the EPO suspension. The fights that make sense would be, to me, if you're going to put him at the top of the line, someone like Sanhagen, Sanhagen still needs that. For some reason, I don't think the fans are still behind him 100% as far as, like, you know, a championship, you know, main event pay-per-view type guy yet. And he needs to beat a guy like Dillashaw. That's what Munhoz realizes, too. He needs to beat – everyone needs to beat Dillashaw for some reason to become the next, you know, Dillashaw-type star in terms of bantamweight division. So, I don't think it's going to be Munhoz, unfortunately. But, man, Munhoz is awesome. I think he's a very underrated, very, very underrated 135er.
I dug the call out a lot. Sarah, what would you do if you had the mighty pencil besides sign yourself to the UFC, which is well-deserved? What would you do with TJ Dillashaw? Who should he fight in his comeback?
He could fight me. And then I could just fight in whatever division, you know, is available. But
135. You weigh the same.
Yeah, 135 tomorrow.
No, I know, but I'm saying, like, you know, we could just make a genderless division, and then anyone who doesn't fit into having someone agree to fight them in another division, they could just come to our division.
see, the whole time
I know that's dumb.
No, it's not dumb because we're all talking about new weight classes. Oh, we need 165. We need 195. Turns out we need a genderless division. That was the issue. Thank you, Sarah.
Yeah.
I'm gonna tell Jose to bring up Dana next time when he talks to him.
Yeah, or like an outskirts division, like I'm the pale Canadian female that no one wants to fight at 135, and he's you know a former champion who did some steroids or EPOs, and then wanted to come back. You know, we could be the outliers.
Or this is like Survivor. You guys are like on Exile Island. This is like your chance to get back onto the island proper, as it were. You just have to fight for it.
But that's right.
I would love that.
But I agree that I don't think that he should get an immediate title shot. I think that he lost that right when he made whatever decisions he made, and it's also been a lot of time and a lot has happened in the division. And that division is amazing and has so many talented people right now that he should have to fight before it. The one fight I do not want to see Jose Aldo. Yeah, Jeremiah, I agree with you. I do not want to see Jose Aldo fighting TJ Dillashaw because I'm just such an Aldo fan. And while Aldo's amazing, I don't want to see it. I don't think that it's a great fight for him. With all the extra movement that TJ does, I don't want to see that fight, mostly because I'm a fan of Aldo and I don't think that he'd win. But I think Sanhagen would be a great fight. Sanhagen's, you know, clearly on the up. I agree with Casey. Give him that fight. If he gets the win, then he can challenge for the title. If he doesn't, Corey's in a great place. You know, he's beaten the the former title holder who didn't actually lose his belt. He just had to give up his belt. And then he should get to fight for the title next.
I'm a broken record here.
Yeah,
you know what I'm going to say.
I love that fight. Yeah.
There's only one fight Faber. To make. It's Dillashaw versus Faber. That is the fight. Right. That is the fight. There's heat there. If you're going to do it, you have to do it now.
Yes.
And it's like, it doesn't matter. Like the division's like, let the logjam play out. Let Dillashaw fight Faber. Let the heat go. You can headline any card with that fight. Dillashaw probably wins. And then do whatever you want to do with him. Just give him one more fight to get his feet wet. Do it with Faber. Get the ratings. Get the heat. Story's there. It's right there. It's right there for you.
Mike, I love
question.
It. But, oh, go ahead, sir. Yeah.
Did Faber not retire? Did I miss something? Exactly. Or did he retire and come back?
Yeah, he came back. And he's kind of said, after he came back, he's kind of said, I'm still I'm not fighting regularly, but I'm more than happy to take, you know, on a case by case basis, if certain fights get sent my way, I will definitely, you know, definitely consider it. And that's one he would obviously sign up for. Yeah. I think, you know, the question was asking which call out would be rewarded. And I think there's one call out that's still to be done. I wonder if Dominic Cruz would call out TJ, should he get past Kenny? And that's one that Dillashaw would definitely be interested in. That's a win I think he would want to get back. So if we're just talking callouts, and I know there's a hypothetical one, I wonder if Cruz would call him out and set up that rematch. And then and Dillashaw would definitely say yes. But Casey, there's a question which I think you're going to love. I don't know if you saw it from Terrence Leverett about open scoring.
Oh, is it?
Oh, God.
Did you see this? Well, no, that's good. But we've talked about it ad nauseum.
we might have even talked
about it the last time we had Sarah on like the A side or something. It probably has already come up with Sarah, but there's nothing wrong with revisiting it. Very meta. Very nice, Kate. Very meta. Terrence Leverett's asking in regards to the Alex Hernandez result, because Alex Hernandez was very surprised that he lost the Moises. I think we all were scoring at home. For us watching, we all thought Moises. Well, it was a good fight, but most of us thought Moises won. He was very surprised. And I know, Casey, you had tweeted about how different it would have been if Hernandez's team had open scoring information. So this question, Terrence Lever specifically asking, what does Sarah think of open scoring?
I like it. I think that if you're going to give, you know, most sports, you know what the score is at all times. Now, I get for the fans that you want to be able to have that excitement of like, and the winner is, and there's kind of like that little moment where you're not quite sure because it could be either way. But as a fighter and as an athlete and as a coach, you want to be able to give the most accurate information to the fighter, or as a fighter, I want to know the most accurate information. So if it's an option to know what this judge thought, yes, you might get some people coast in a third round if you know that they've won the first two. And they might kind of anti-fight, but maybe you implement in that case potentially, you know, almost like a yellow card or, you know, the timidity factor. If someone is clearly not engaging, you know, you can get a warning and then, you know, maybe that can be addressed if it needed to be addressed. But I just think that you should be able to know what these judges are scoring it so that you can accurately change a game plan if you need to. Because if you think that you've won two rounds pretty easily, that you're very confident, and then you take it a little bit easier in that third round, now you lose the fight, you know, you're going to be pretty mad that you had no idea. I guess the other alternative is you could just fight for the full 15 minutes or 25 minutes and not try and play the game. But, it, you know, when wins matter, you know, you're going to play the game as much as you need to get those wins.
There were two times tonight where I think open scoring would have, I don't know if it would change the outcome of the fight, but I think it would have changed the strategy for the losing fighter. Kevin Kroom, before he came out for the third round, John Annex, because we don't get the, at least my feed, I don't get the in-between rounds, so it went to commercial. But they were saying James Krause was telling Kevin Kroom, James Krause is his coach, and James Krause is a very good mixed martial arts coach. He told Kevin Kroom, it's 1-1. But every scorecard had Caceres winning 30-27. So clearly it wasn't 1-1. I just think that sucks. That James Krause is a great MMA coach. Actually told, if he would have told Crash Kroom, dude,
you got to go crazy and just finish this guy. Otherwise, you're going to lose. It's just the fact of the matter. You're going to lose. And I don't know. It's like, I just think it's incredibly dumb. I just don't get it. And yeah, so we don't get the hand raise. But we do. There's knockouts all the time, and we still watch the hand raise. It's like, so when a guy gets knocked out, we don't just go, all right, turn it off. We still want to watch the hand raise anyway, even though we know who won.
Ugh. Well, you still do get a hand raise because you don't actually find out how they scored the last round until the end. So if it was like, you know, the score of the first two, and then that same person or the other, you know, if there's a clear decision on that third round, if it's 1-1, you still get the hand raise, but you know that you're going to get, you know, a surprise on the hand raise.
I don't remember the actual scores of your fight, but when you fought Jessica Evil Eye.
Yeah.
You wind up losing the... I know the fight got eventually got no contest, but what was the scores of the rounds? I remember it was...
Yeah, so I ended up losing a split decision, and it was like 29, 28, 28, 29, 28, 29, or whatever. But the third round was the most decisive round of the whole fight, where it was where I like rocked her, I outthrew, I outlanded, I controlled. Like, there was no way you could score the third round for anyone but me. And the first two rounds were like closer. Like, I was like, oh, I was pretty confident that I had won. But I was like, oh, well, I guess I lost on those. Like, someone scored that second round maybe for her. Mm-hmm. And then when you told me, actually, I think either you or Ariel told me, mm-hmm. oh, actually, look at the scorecards. And someone had scored the second round, which was a close round for me, but then gave her the third round. And that third round is what actually caused me to lose the fight. But it was the only round that was extremely decisive. Like, yes, I could have done way more in the first two, but the third round was like, okay, well, that's a gimme. That's the easiest. Like, any dummy who's never watched would be like, that girl won. So, like, unless they confused us as both being brown hair, you know, Caucasian, somewhat same height females in fight shorts and black gloves, and we're like, eeny, meeny, miny, mo, I forget who you are, I pick you. You know, unless that's the case, there's just Texas has terrible judging.
I apologize for bringing up that bad memory.
No, I mean, they're your people, right? Texas?
Yeah, yeah.
I blame you.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Texas is the reason.
You could have told, here's the thing with Krause and Kroom, though. You could have told Kevin Kroom he was up 20 to 16, and he still would have come out trying to take Caceres' face off. Like, that's just how he is. He came in marching out there like he was a madman anyways. What, you could have told him anything.
Yeah.
Like, literally anything, he was going to fight the same way.
So where's like, this?
Doesn't
where's,
matter.
Where's this argument then these guys are going to coast? You know, I just don't get it. I don't get
it. Well, not all fighters are like that.
Some people would, though. If you know someone's super dangerous and you're like, ooh, okay, I have these, maybe not coast, but take it like a little bit careful.
Like Ciryl Gane?
Like, okay, you know what? I'm just going to pick.
Are we calling Ciryl Gane a coaster?
Which,
because everyone knew he was up. So, I mean, we don't, does that mean he coasts? Is coasting just another euphemism for fighting smart? Because we credit fighting smart.
Yeah, fighting smart, maybe fighting conservatively. So knowing that, like, okay, well, I don't need to throw everything in the kitchen sink at this guy and put myself potentially a bad situation. Whereas if you know you're down 4 out of 5 rounds, you better swing. Otherwise, you may as well just take a knee and kind of say, well, I'm out, if you're not going to actually try and win. So I think that coasting is in some ways like playing it smart. Like, I don't think that Ciryl Gane coasted. I just think that he fought well and he fought consistently for 5 rounds, because he was worried about getting knocked out until the last 5 seconds of the fight. Whereas I think other fighters, you know, if you're not worried about them having that power, you might just play like more of that keep away kind of point fighting style where they can't really touch you and you're winning, or maybe you don't win the round, but you don't take any damage either. To me, that's more of a coasting round than what Ciryl did.
So positive.
See, but Casey, she's thought about it. All right, let's see. I'm not going to go into it. I lean away from open scoring. But again, that's my I'm afraid of the coasting thing. I'm afraid of the coasting issue. And but I'm starting to, Casey, I'm starting to understand. I saw there was an article that came out. Was it this recent this week or last week?
The Kansas,
the results.
Yeah,
from the Kansas City or the Kansas. Yeah,
or Missouri Commission. Okay. Missouri Commission, rather. Yeah,
Missouri Commission. Excuse me. Yeah. Well, no, it would have been Kansas because it would have been Invicta, right? It would have been Kansas City. It would have actually been Kansas, I think.
They do their fights in Missouri. They're Kansas City, but Kansas City, Missouri. But sometimes they fight in Kansas City. I don't know.
It's Kansas City, Kansas. Anyway, one of the commissions that I believe it's Kansas City, Kansas, that's been doing. So I believe it's Kansas, the Kansas Commission that's been doing. And there, it did. Apparently, there were some promising results as far as late finishes and fights that had where people score something like that. It's out there. The report's out there. But I understand.
I was about to ask for Sarah's foot again after you guys trying to figure out the Missouri Kansas Commission thing because we needed to get these viewership numbers back up.
Stop.
Show the foot. Oh my
God. Who's there? It is.
This makes great sense in the audio podcast.
Who's taller? Sarah Coffin, or TJ Dillashaw?
Well, how tall is TJ?
I don't know.
Some of these, like, listen.
I don't know. Gino needs to know this. I don't know. I don't need to know, but Gino needs to know. So.
Well, no, we've been matching them up, so it's good to know.
Yeah. He's 5'6".
Very rarely. I'm going to say that I'm taller because he's probably not 5'6 if he's saying he's 5'6". Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My record technically says I'm 5'5". I'm, like, slightly but I don't know that he's 5'6". Maybe he's 5'5".
Yeah. By the way, Jarzinho Rosenstrike is not 6'4". Can we stop this? He's not 6'4". If Ciryl Gane is 6'4", Jarzinho Rosenstrike is not 6'4".
No, Jarzinho looked about as tall as DC. Maybe a little bit taller than DC, maybe.
In one of my fight cards, for whatever reason, I don't remember which one it was, but it said that I was 5'9". And I'm like, who put this as a joke? Like, I've never written down that I'm 5'9", for sure. But I was 5'9", for one fight, and I felt pretty good about it.
Your opponent must have freaked out.
Sports are hilarious, man. I remember, like, when I played college baseball, like, I was probably, like, 5'11", and my freshman year, I was probably, like, 170, maybe 175. And they had me listed at 6'1", 205. And I was nowhere near either of those numbers. But they just put it there because they want to inflate them. I'm like, I'm 35 pounds heavier. You're crazy. You people are out of your minds. We're at Division III college, for God's sake. I'm not here. I ain't intimidating anybody.
All right. So we've been blabbing for an hour. So.
Okay. Yeah.
6'11".
Yeah. Give or take.
Give or take. Yeah. Obviously.
Yeah. I could see it.
I mean, with her new foot surgery, you got to be way taller now. I'm sure they added extra. But your foot,
More feet.
Yeah, they took the bone piece out. They just added it to the bottom of my heel, so it just raised me up to 6'11".
That's amazing.
Just to get confirmation, this is true.
Why are you putting this? I saw that. Why are you putting this comment on?
I have never seen a woman before. Right. So
well, listen, this is addressing me, Michael. Let me read this out. Thanks, the Donquistador. NFFC. Have you guys never seen me before? This is so cringe and awkward. Listen, I'm cringe and awkward for many reasons, but it's not because we have a great guest like Sarah Coffman on, all right? Trust me. Hold on. You guys watch any of our videos. I'm cringe and awkward like this all the time, all right? So, Sarah, don't feel responsible that we have a special guest that's not Jose. No, I'm like this all the time. This is cool.
I'm pretty sure my foot is the one's made it cringe and awkward, but, you know.
Yeah, pay attention.
I don't think it's me being feminine.
I'm not blaming the foot. The foot is, again, like I said, we've got a lot of people watching right now, and I would not hesitate to say like 90% is because of the foot.
I've seen a woman before. Casey, you've seen a woman before.
That came off really creepy, Mike.
What? I get the wedding ring on. I've seen a woman. Casey's got Esther in the house. We all know it. She's the iconic voice. How dare you, Sarah?
Casey, can we get this another question up?
Bullshit. You gave me a nice comment, and now did you just yank it away? Call me a creep? We got to go another 10 minutes. Maybe I have to redeem myself, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
What a bunch of BS. Unreal.
Well, I see the Don Quisador seemed to like our response. So thank you. Thank you for the question, Don Quisador. We're all having a good time. We're all friends here. Thank you.
It's the nice Don Quisador.
Yeah. What else? We got any more?
We're just getting some, matchup questions,
Oh, that's all for, That's all for. Yeah, it's on to the next one.
That's on to the next one. We're not going to do any matchup questions.
Oh, I'm going to talk about this.
Who do we see next for Rosenstruck?
I kind of like it. I saw some people mentioning that on social media right away. Well, they said Blades for Gone or Rosenstruck. I kind of like that. Yeah.
But maybe let Blades recover his brain first, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Sarah, would you be in favor of? So it's funny, when the medical suspensions come out, usually the longer suspensions are more for bone related injuries, fractures, things like that.
Right.
Knockouts typically get maybe I know Blades only got a mandatory suspension April, so 2 months. Is there, is there a way that they can, address this more not seriously? I'm sure they take it seriously, but more in a more concrete way. And do you think they just start issuing, provisional 6 month suspensions for people who suffer these massive knockouts? I mean, I don't know. Does that even make sense?
It does make sense. And I could be wrong here, but in some cases, I think that it's the 60 day suspension. But they also have to have a cleared, before your next fight, the commission requires, almost every commission requires that if you just got knocked out, you have a cleared head scan.
Okay.
So while maybe not every commission does that, but most before you fill out all your athletic commission paperwork and it says, what was the result of your last bout? And if it was a knockout, a lot of times they require that you have been cleared from a doctor or that you've obtained a new MRI since your last knockout. So I think that in that case, I would hope that it's making sure that the fighters are as healthy as possible. But to me, if you've been knocked out 30 days ago or 60 days ago, that's supposed to be before you have contact, not necessarily before you have another agreement, another fight, because presumably you're going to spar in your fight. So I'm fortunate that I have not been knocked out and I hope to not be knocked out. But if that were the case, I also hope that either myself or my team around me would make sure that I definitely take the appropriate time to make sure that I heal properly, but then also have a proper camp that's controlled enough. And that if there are any setbacks, which there often are with concussion and head trauma, that, I would take the time to not just want to take a fight and do it and get the loss off my brain, but take the time to heal properly. And sometimes that takes, 6 months. Sometimes that takes a year for some people with really bad concussions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And sometimes it has to do with the team that surrounds you too. Cause Casey, you were there for the interview with Tyson Chartier, Calvin Kattar's coach. And he was basically Calvin wanted to go for a run the next day after the Max Holloway fight. And we're you ain't doing any of that stuff. And now they're going to they did a CAT scan when they got back to Vegas. And they said everything was pretty normal. It was better than most of his other fights that he's had. And they're going to go back in March, get it checked again. And then they're going to go back again in June and get it checked again. And if everything's perfect after June, then we'll start thinking about the next move. So they're basically making Calvin take 6 months off from anything that has to do with contact or any of that stuff until they have three complete scans. So it kind of depends on the people you're surrounded by too. So maybe Curtis Blaze's coaches are dude, that was a pretty ruthless knockout. I know you want to get back in there. You got one fight left in your contract. You want to take that next step and see where you're at. But maybe the guys over at Elevation, Sean Madden, who's a fantastic coach over there, maybe he's Curtis, let's just slow it down and see where we're at in a few months and go from there. So I guess it all depends. It depends on the fighter, depends on the people around you. And, look at Frankie Edgar. He got knocked up by Brian Ortega ruthlessly. And then he fought Cub Swanson, less than 2 months later? Crazy. And he won. So, people are different. It's tough.
Yeah.
And people, Sarah, you probably know this. I think as fans, even media, we get kind of caught up in the big knockouts, but we forget even the fights that guys win in, they take a lot of time, just as much head trauma as the guy that loses, you know, or female that loses. So it's all fights are there's head trauma in every fight, and just
look at Munoz. Look at Munoz today.
He
won the fight, and when he did the interview after, I was and he's such a sharp guy. He was so lucid, but like, I was just thinking, like, man, I want to hear from Munoz. I'm sure he wants to have his camera time, but like, I would prefer if this guy went right back to the medics right away, because I was like, I always liken those kind of 3-round fights. And Sarah, I don't know, maybe I'm exaggerating. It's like, it looks like it's like being in a car crash, and it'd be crazy to me for them to interview someone one after a car crash and then tell them, by the way, in 3 months, would you be ready to get into another car crash? That's kind of like, honestly, that's kind of how I see it. And again, I know, Sarah, like you said, you've been lucky enough to avoid any like really crazy knockouts, but just from the outside looking in, you know, that's kind of how these things look to me. And like, it's so scary to me. But yeah, 20 cases that you mentioned, like how people look after their fights. Yeah.
I agree. And I think in some ways that when you see those like one punch knockouts, maybe that shot was really bad and they have a bad concussion from it, but maybe it was only one shot and then the fight's over and they actually didn't have multiple, you know, where your brain's bouncing repeatedly and you kind of get a mini concussion, but then you keep going, you get another one, you keep going, you keep getting it hit. And those ones, I think, when you have those like, crazy tough fights where potentially someone takes some of those really like thudding hard shots, they've taken more damage than the guy who just got hit with one punch, got knocked out, and is actually probably somewhat okay in the realm of how much trauma he's taken because it was only the one. And so, yeah, like that Calvin fight was nuts. And as a fighter, I get that he wanted to stay in there, but as a fan, I'm like, oh, we could end this fight. Potentially this could carry on and be like, maybe that was the pinnacle because you took so much damage in that fight. Maybe you're never the same. So it's good to hear that the camp is reflecting on that and trying to be really smart about coming back and not letting him come back really early. But yeah, we sign up to be in car crashes. That's kind of what we do. That's why we're fighting. We know the risks. We know that it's the potential. I mean, you also sometimes get bonus money for those fights. So whether, you know, you probably don't want to be known for having the fight of the night. While it's exciting, it's not great on the body, but it's also pretty fun to be in those fights. And so it's hard to kind of shy away from those when that's your style. And you know, you kind of want to get back in there right away.
You sicko.
I know.
Yeah. Mike, before we get out, we don't need to talk about this, but since Sarah won't probably be with us next week, can we get some predictions for the championship fights from Sarah Kaufman next weekend?
Oh, so there's the three, right? Or is there more than three? There's just the three.
Add them all. But it was
three next week, yeah.
Yeah.
So we,
So are you going to go main event first?
Go for it. Ladies' choice.
Okay. So main event is the 205s, right? It's Adesanya and Blachowicz? How do I say his name? Mm-hmm.
Blachowicz.
Blachowicz.
Don't help her. Don't
Jan.
Help her.
Jan versus Izzy.
No, there are two Jans on this card. You can't say Jan.
Oh, you're right. That's
pretty good.
Yeah, so no. Use that.
You could say John, though. You could say John.
John. Yeah. Yeah, the main event, Izzy and John. Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a fun fight. I'd love to see Adesanya do well just because he's coming up, and I like to see, you know, people challenge themselves and come up and do something that's kind of pretty extraordinary. But I like that Jan's kind of style is, I would say, consistent and, you know, fundamentally pretty strong. And so I could see him trying to for sure wrestle Adesanya and kind of use his size. I think that would be the smart thing to do. So I'd like to see Jan keep his title. I think Amanda Nunes, I think, pretty easily takes the title. I don't think that it's too much of a fight with Megan Anderson. Megan, of course, has great range and has a lot of skill in that striking department. She's tall, she's long. She is strong, but I think that Amanda Nunes will probably use the calf kicks early, stay on the outside, close the distance quickly, go for those takedowns. I think she'll probably finish her within one or two rounds on the ground. And then the 135 fight, I think, is probably like the most competitive, where I don't really know who to choose. I like that Sterling's finally getting the opportunity to step up and get that title shot because I feel like it's been a long time coming. But Peter Yan is he's a tough fighter. I think that he's well-rounded enough that he'll probably keep the title.
There you go. Three and stills.
That's all you need to hear, yeah. Three and stills, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And stills, yeah. I guess. Yeah. Unless there it's not.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. Hedging. Well, hedging. That's a good hedge. Well, Mike, before you sign us off, I want to, the music's still going. We will have a special edition of The Great Divide tomorrow on MMAfighting.com by Jed and I, breaking down, talking about all 10 fighters competing in the upcoming title fights and making a case for all of them. So yes, I got Megan. I drew Megan Anderson, and I will have a case for why Megan can somehow beat Amanda Nunez. So please, we'll look out for that tomorrow. But thanks, Sarah. Thanks, Sarah, for being here.
Thanks, guys.
Yes, Sarah.
Sorry about my internet.
Oh, you're great internet. Great internet. Any last words, Sarah? Anything you want to tell the peeps before we wrap this thing up?
Well, if I can't get a fight, I think my next career is going to be on The Masked Dancer. So yes. My costume will probably be some kind of full Snow White attire. That's who I'll be. That's probably.
There you go. Well, that was great.
Killed it. I love it. Killed it.
I love it.
It. Killed
it. You and Ken sure Jeong, it's going to be...
Touchdown.
Oh, so great.
Yeah, grand slam.
I'll make sure you can see my feet, though, all right? I'll make sure you can see my feet.
Oh, God. There we go. Yeah. Ratings.
She knows what sells, ladies and gentlemen. So officially here on the East Coast, it is officially UFC 259 fight week. So get excited for that. We'll have lots of coverage. Jose will be there. So we'll have media days. I think Between the Links is actually going to be Wednesday this week instead of Thursday because there's a press conference on Thursday, as you saw on the broadcast. And then we'll have weigh-in show and pre-fight show and post-fight show and preview shows and all sorts of craziness. So we will have you covered throughout the week. And then AK and I are back tomorrow, putting a bow on UFC Vegas 20 with On to the Next One, the podcast. So look for that. Make sure you subscribe on the podcast network and get it before anybody else does. With that being said, for AK, Casey Lydon, for our great special guest, Sarah Kaufman, I am Mike Heck. Good night, everybody.
Happy birthday.
Candy. Stop it.
Sarah, is AK's birthday?
It is not my birthday.
Today?
Yeah.
No, it is not. It's not. It's never my birthday. Stop it.
Kate, I thought you were the Prince of Positive.
Yeah. You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.